This podcast is supported by 23andMe.co.uk, a personalised genetic service available in the UK. The 23andMe genetic analysis is based on a small saliva sample. People in the UK can learn about their genetic information that published studies associate with conditions like blood clotting, cystic fibrosis, and even response to certain medicines. More information is available at 23andMe.co.uk.
Come one, come all, to the show where former pro football stars tell their stories. Plus the 12th Man segment with Sports One Marketing. It's all right here, right now, on Thursday Night Tailgate. With your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari.
Hey, thank you, Joe Lajanusa. Good evening, everybody, and happy draft night. And what a night this is going to be, not only around the... ...perspective favorite teams think can help, can improve their rosters, and I'm certainly hoping Kevin Colbert chooses very wisely tonight. Hey, Kevin, no more 5'7" and 170-pound running backs, please. All right, while we all keep one eye on the draft, Bob and I have a great lineup to share with you tonight. We got a Pro Bowler with us. We got a couple of media members from around our respective teams to share their draft insights with us. We got a guy who's on the fast track to being a college or NFL head coach, or should be a college or NFL head coach. We got a Canadian Football League All-Star, and on our 12th Man segment with Sports One Marketing CEO David Meltzer, a two-time Super Bowl tight end, is going to join us. So we are looking forward to a great night here on Thursday Night Tailgate. We've got, you know, a great lineup to share for you. We are so thankful that you are here to join and be a part of the show with us tonight as well. But before we get too far into it, let's start off this show the very best way possible by bringing in my co-host, Mr. Bob Lazzari. Bob, happy draft night. How are you tonight, my friend?
It's a great night. How are you, Chris?
I'm fantastic, sir. And snow done, Bob? Are we all done with that now? Are we on to summer for you guys, or at least spring?
I'm going to make the announcement for the world to hear tonight. We're done with snow. from what I can gather, Chris, I'm looking at the forecast. Saturday, we're bringing temperatures into the 60s and then 70s Sunday. And yeah, and what is it? It's May 1st, Chris. I told everyone, you know, we're safe here around May 1st. And he said, you're crazy. But guess what? It took about May 1st this year for all the snow to go away and for us to be out of the woodwork. When we talked last week, we talked about snow flurries, you remember. So
right.
But yeah, we're done. I'm going out on a limb. Even in crazy New England, we are done. And this is a reason to celebrate more than anything in the world right now.
I bet it is for you, my friend. All right, folks, you know, like we say every single week now, you know, we've got great guests. We got Bob here ready to go. It's draft night. We got ESPN over the shoulder waiting to see what happens there. We'll try to bring you that as we happen to see it. So relax, settle in, and let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours. TNT is brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly and the great folks over at Kaivan Foods. Be sure to spice up everything on your menu by adding Kaivan salsa, sauces, and spices to what you've got cooking. Check them out online at kaivan82.com. That's Kaivan, K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com to see all of their great products. TNT is also sponsored by Dr. Peter Candelora and the great folks over at Coastal Orthopedics. Does it hurt when you get out of bed in the morning, folks? Are you simply just dealing and living with joint pain? Why are you doing that? Do what the Gridiron Greats do to get relief, and that's contact Coastal Orthopedics to see how they can help you get back to enjoying life. For more information, check them out online at bone-dr.com. The baseball season's a month old. Now summer vacation is right around the corner. You can see kids about to get out of school about a month from now. If you love the game of baseball, you need to take them to the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. If you haven't been, you really got to go. You get to see the actual bats that your favorite major league players are going to be stepping to the plate with. You get to see those bats being made right in front of you. You get to walk the actual live production line and see the full process going on. And they let you know whose bats those are. So to find out more information and to book your visit, go to sluggermuseum.com. We also want to give a shout out to our friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. They are doing great things to help take care of the guys who played long before there were six-figure salaries in the healthcare coverage. They've got a great event coming up in June. It's an evening with some great former players. You got Mike Ditka, Mean Joe Green, Fred Biletnikoff, Tom Mack, Dick Vermeil, Jimbo Covert, Jim McMahon, and so many more. It's a Hall of Fame dinner followed by a golf outing on Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at the Silverton Casino and Hotel out in Las Vegas. I'm telling you, folks, it's a great event, and the tickets are going really quickly. For more information, go to gridirongreats.org/Hall of Fame. All right, tonight, who do we got with us? All right, well, first up in the 12th man segment, along with Sports One Marketing CEO and best-selling author David Meltzer, is going to be former Broncos and Vikings tight end and two-time Super Bowl champion tight end, by the way, Byron Chamberlain. We'll hear what Byron and Dave are working on together here in just a few minutes. Following them is going to be former Giants Pro Bowl defensive end Leonard Marshall. Leonard is not only a three-time Pro Bowler, but he was also there for the Giants Super Bowl championship teams in 1986 and 1990. So back-to-back two-time Super Bowl champs here, folks. You'll remember that it was also Leonard who hit Joe Montana and knocked him out of the NFC championship game back in 1990. That proved to be the last game Joe Montana ever started for the 49ers. So we'll talk about that and so much more when Leonard's here about 15 minutes from now. Being that it's draft nights, and you know, like I said in the intro, you know, I need some insight into what the Steelers might be thinking. So our good friend Paul Alexander from Root Sports up in Pittsburgh is going to be with us. Plus, to balance things out for Bob up there in New England, Chad Finn from the Boston Globe will also join us. So we'll get both of their thoughts and insights into what the Steelers will do from Paul and what the Patriots may be thinking from Chad when they round out the second half of this hour. Then we'll kick off the next hour with our friend and former Dolphins guard and head coach of the Brooklyn Bolts, John Bock. John is one of the great under-recognized football coaches out there. He's a guy who should be on the very short list for every team who may be in need of a head coach. As you may recall, John was the head coach of the Brooklyn Bolts of the FXFL last summer. That's the Fall Experimental League. 12 of his players on a roster of 36 are now on a roster somewhere in the NFL. Plus, he's got some folks that have moved on to up to the CFL and to the Arena League as well. So we'll get John's thoughts and insights in tonight's draft when he joins us a little over an hour from now. And then we'll wrap up the show with former BC Lions all-star and current free agent defensive back Dante Marsh. CFL training camps open soon. Dante's still a free agent, which is crazy to me. He had a good season last year for the BC Lions, but he's 36 and appears like teams are paying more attention to his age than the film that they can see with his play on the field. So we hope once training camp opens up that they'll take a look at that tape and stop looking at the age, and he'll get a job. But we'll talk to Dante about that and hear more about what other things he's got going on when he joins us about 90 minutes from now. So as always, folks, we are wall-to-wall with great guests for you on draft night here on Thursday Night Tailgate. We thank you for being here and taking the journey with us tonight. But let's get the ball rolling like we do every single week by saluting our brave men and women serving in the military and listening in tonight on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We want to pass along our sincere thanks to all of you and all of our veterans and everyone serving in every branch of the military and public service. You folks are absolutely incredible, and we thank you for the sacrifices you either made or are making now for all of us. We truly appreciate what you do to protect the freedoms and the liberties that we all have. You provide it to us, and it allows the rest of us to do what we do. Our sincere thanks as well to Sean Cruz and all the folks over at the Armed Forces Radio Network. It's an honor for us to have our show be a part of your network. You can find us by going to armedforcesradionetwork.org. And for the veterans listening in tonight, be sure to check out globalvoiceforveterans.org. It's a great site. It's got a wealth of information for our veterans. There's news and articles specifically geared towards the veterans out there. I'm sure you're going to find the information on that site both interesting and beneficial. Again, globalvoiceforveterans.org. I also want to remind everyone where you can find our show. You can stream or download us for free from our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Plus, our friends over at Boost Radio are streaming us every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to BoostRadioNetwork.com and click on the on-air link that you're going to find in the upper right-hand corner of their homepage to hear us. You can also find us online at iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, and you can take us with you everywhere you go on your mobile device by downloading the Stitcher or Player.fm app as well. All right, before we get to our 12th man segment with Dave Meltzer, let's hear about a word from our friends over at Kyven Foods.
Add great flavor to your next tailgate party with Kyven Salsas. Former NFL tight end Reggie Kelly created these salsas for dipping chips and much more. In hot and mild flavors, Kyven salsas make a great marinade. They are terrific in meatloaf and are super toppers for everything from baked potatoes to scrambled eggs. It's a great ingredient to enjoy in a variety of family favorite meals. And some people say Kyven salsa is a meal to itself. With all the possibilities, Kyven is truly salsa with soul. Kyven salsas are also made from natural ingredients, and they are preservative-free. So look for Kyven, that's K-Y-V-A-N, at area Walmart stores or online. Click on the Kyven logo on our website to check retail and online locations. More information at Kyven82.com.
If you want your guests to be raving about your next house party or your tailgate party, be sure to serve them plenty of Kyven Foods salsa, sauces, and spices to liven up everything you're going to put out on your spread. Be sure to check out their recipes that you can find on our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, as well as their site, Kyven82.com. And again, that's Kyven, K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com. And check them out on Facebook and give them a like. That's important to them, too. I'm telling you, folks, one taste and you're going to appreciate the goodness. All right, now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line in our weekly 12th man segment is Sports One Marketing CEO and best-selling author David Meltzer, along with his special guest tonight, former Broncos and Vikings plus two-time Super Bowl champion tight end Byron Chamberlain. Now, their interview was pre-recorded earlier today since they are both traveling. Take a listen to what they are working on together.
So it's a pleasure to have the great Byron Chamberlain, and he is on his way off to cover the draft in no other place other than London, believe it or not. While I'm here in Chicago, Byron, I was hoping you'd be here to vibe with me. I thought we could discuss the draft a little bit, and I just wanted to know your thoughts before you go across the pond, what you thought about our first two draft picks. And number one, what do you think about the fact that they're not coming to the draft, and should they be paid to be here?
Well, what I think about the first two draft picks, I think it's definitely going to be the quarterbacks are going to go first. There's definitely the marquee players and the marquee people in this draft with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. Seems like Cleveland is making a big push. They've offered Tennessee their two first-round draft picks this year and even maybe some other compensation to get that number two pick. Trying to shore up their quarterback situation. For me, the way that they're having, they want them at the draft, but Jameis Winston has his grandmother who's an older lady with type 2 diabetes, so she can't travel there. He wants to be around his family, and I can respect that. I definitely can respect that. Marcus Mariota, I know, being a Hawaiian guys, and I was born in Hawaii, grew up in Niaea, and understand how much family plays a role in the Hawaiian culture. So to me, it's not a shock that he wants to be with his family, he wants to be there to celebrate, this major, major accomplishment in his life with their family. So, to me, it's admirable. I love the fact that they're gonna enter the NFL, this next phase of their life, this life changing experience, and they're gonna experience with experienced it with their family.
Yeah, no doubt. I respect that as well. The interesting thing, too, to me is that, you know, I have this feeling about the Pro Bowl. I think the NFL should get realistic about the draft and the Pro Bowl and make it a TV show. You know, it literally could be in a studio. We don't need to bring anyone in live. Everyone could be covered from kind of their B-roll as well as their location with their families. I think they'll get a lot less resistance. You know, I'm here in Chicago, and they have a little bit of a fan fest. It really reminds me of the Pro Bowl where it's like, but this is for TV, and I think what we should do with the Pro Bowl, which is similar to the draft, is, you know, we have the guys who win, and because they can't play if they're in the Super Bowl anyway, we go ahead and give them that award, and there's just no Pro Bowl game. But it's a lot more interesting. You learn more about the players, their background, their B-roll. It still enhances and escalates the image and brand of the NFL, but we don't go through these silly motions of, you know, having Hall of Famers coach guys playing half seed and having ridiculous game that, you know, it's really not what the NFL intends.
Well, the Pro Bowl has kind of changed, and I like to see it back where it used to be when I played in it. It was a bit competitive now.
Yeah.
Guys got competitive. And the thing about it was you had a great season. You got selected to the Pro Bowl by your peers and by the fans. And so, you know, when I was playing, which is not that long ago, I don't feel that old, but... You know, I mean, guys really appreciated going to Hawaii. It was a big deal for guys to, you know, as we used to say, go across the waters, you know, and get to Hawaii. So, you know, I was proud to be selected to the Pro Bowl. I was proud to play in the game. And when I got in the game, I played hard, you know, because I felt like I owed it to. You know, the fans that voted me there, the players that voted me there, and also special, it was in my hometown of Honolulu. So,
wow.
So I took it as a honor to be even selected. So I think we have to get it back to that type of mentality where guys don't feel like so entitled, but it's an honor to be selected, and you want to go out and put on a show for the people who selected you and the fans that are there in attendance.
Sure. And they have the owner's interest, so they're terrified that these huge multi-million dollar investments are going to get hurt. So there's a variety of different interests. I'm going to go back to the draft real quick. You know, I know the interesting thing for me in the draft is, you know, can Cleveland trade up, or are the Chargers in a realistic position to get rid of Phillip Rivers and trade up? I would love to see, you know, for that Cleveland deal, for them to throw in one of my least favorite players, the most entitled player I know in the league, Johnny Manziel. Let them throw him back in as a Cleveland fan. I'd love to see Mariota come to Cleveland and not only give up the draft picks for him, that's fine, but also maybe throw in Manziel as a kicker.
You know, from what I'm hearing from my sources, what I'm hearing from the Chargers is Phillip Rivers is not going anywhere. You know, the thing about it is, Phillip is he's an elite quarterback. And you look, there's only 32 starting quarterbacks in the league. And then you look deeper and say, okay, the guys that are the elite guys, I mean, it's only about four or five guys. And Phillip is one of those guys. So,
yeah.
You know, you don't find those type of guys just every day. So when you have one, you're not in a rush to get rid of them. As far as Cleveland goes, you know, I can see it. I see they offered their two number one draft picks of this year. You know, you never know what you're going to get. Johnny Manziel, I applaud him for acknowledging his problem and going to rehab and trying to fix the problem. And all reports now that his teammates, you know, not to say he's a changed man, but they have positive feelings about him coming back from rehab. He's been there at practicing with the guys and working out with the guys. So, but like I said, you never know what you're gonna get with a guy coming back from that type of situation and those type of issues that he's dealing with. So for me, you know, I think you do make a move to draft Marcus Mariota. As far as his character, he's an A-plus character guy, so you're not going to have an issue there. He's a great athlete, very smart, will learn your system very, very quickly, and just so athletic, and I think he would give that kind of spark to that Cleveland franchise needs. And it's not only their franchise, but their fan base, and he would kind of present a little hope that they've been looking for years.
Yeah, and you know I'm partial to you and to Warren and Joe Montana and Tom Brady. The draft to me, you know, I would rather trade for certainty than draft for prospect. And you know, I draft for prospect if I was a general manager in that seventh round. And there's plenty of great Pro Bowlers that like yourself and Warren and Tom and these guys that weren't drafted in the first round, but yet you know have all the talent, character, both on and off the field, be considered the best of the best. And you know that's what your image and brand has been on the field and off the field. And I'm just so excited to have you on the show. I was hoping maybe just to finish up, if you could just let everyone know, because you know this is an inspirational show called The 12 Man, and I love bringing guys on that were heroes on the field, but you're a remarkable businessman, and I just thought maybe take a couple quick moments to share with us what you got going on off the field to inspire some of these guys, like myself, that you know maybe played in Division III football, maybe quit playing football after high school, but let them know that no matter what level you're playing, you know, you can use that character discipline and strategy that you learned on the football field, and it'll make you a success, fulfilled person, purposeful, helping others off the field. So if you could share with others kind of by what you're doing right now, I think it'd be an inspiration for everyone.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I'm doing right now is basically you can call me a global ambassador for the game of football, because I think the game is, I think it's the greatest game in the history of the world. I mean, the things and the lessons that I learned from the game of football, as far as character, as far as discipline, as far as being a team player, as far as being unselfish and you know, working together with guys that look different, that have different beliefs than me, that come from different backgrounds than me. I learned so much, and the game has given me so much. So now what I'm doing is I have a company called Pro Day Experience, and we partner with other companies around the world. There's a company called American Football Development in the UK. There's a company called American Football Union in China. And we go to these countries, and we actually do football camps, do football trainings. Even in other places, we actually establish football teams. We establish 8 football teams at universities in China. And this
wow.
is a big game of football, and letting those guys learn the lessons that the game has to offer. And you know, just you know, being tough, being physical, being a leader, being responsible, just all the good lessons that come out of the game of football. So, as you mentioned earlier, I'm headed to London right now, and I'm going to work with CNN International with their NFL draft coverage. But also, I'm going over there. I'm going to be there for 2 weeks after that with American Football Development. Kind of planning and strategizing. They're doing some big things as far as camps and their grassroots efforts, and they're trying to organize some things that are going to be around some of the football games that when the NFL comes over to play in the fall in London, they're going to have hundreds of kids trying to introduce them to the game of American football, building off the momentum of the NFL being there. And also trying to establish a youth flag football league to try to get young kids interested in the game of American football.
Oh, that's awesome. In fact, you should give Warren and I a call. We're working with the NFL and the NFL flag program ourselves here in the United States. I know our time is up, and I want to wish you only the best over there, and I'm praying that you'll keep in touch with Warren and I and hopefully come back on the show, spend more time with Bob and Chris even off my segment. But you are a hero to so many, and we really appreciate you. So thank you so much, Byron.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Great stuff from Dave Meltzer and Byron Chamberlain there. Hopefully we do get a chance to have Byron back on with us for another segment really soon, because he is really fantastic to get the opportunity to talk to. Dave's book is Connected to Goodness, Manifest Everything You Desire in Business and in Life. And if you haven't picked up your copy yet, you can get it on Amazon.com. It's a fantastic read. Like I say all the time, it's something you are going to refer back to time and time again over the course of your life. So it's a great book. Again, Connected to Goodness. Bob, I think to the surprise of nobody outside of, you know, potentially that there might have been a trade. So, you know, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota go 1-2 to the Bucs and Titans. Surprised at all by that, Bob?
You know, the only surprise, Chris, was that if Tennessee was going to take Mariota, there was so much speculation of whether, you know, but when I looked at the roster, I mean, they just have to build something around a quarterback, Chris. And whether he is the guy, whether if he still can get traded, I don't know. But I don't see how the Titans can go too far with the roster they have now and with the offense they have now. So not really surprised. I think Tennessee would be probably very well-versed in keeping the guy and trying to build around him. I think he's smart enough and can translate from that shotgun offense at Oregon to something more NFL-like.
Right. Well, we'll talk more draft. Bob and I will talk more draft. Hopefully we get Leonard Marshall to call in here. And on the other side of this, word from our friends over at Coastal Orthopedics.
If you suffer from joint pain, you need to contact our friend, Dr. Peter Candelora and the folks at Coastal Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Located in Newport Richey, Florida, just north of Tampa, Dr. Candelora has practiced orthopedic surgery since 1989 and is board certified, a member of the Florida Orthopedic Association and American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. His experienced staff of medical professionals are ready to help get you back to enjoying life. Coastal Orthopedics has all the latest technology to get your joints feeling good again. Their state-of-the-art facility and attention to detail will ensure you will be enjoying life again and feeling invincible. So let's get active. For more information or to schedule an appointment, go to bone-dr.com or call them 727-848-1417. That's 727-848-1417 or online at bone-dr.com. They're also proud sponsors of Mike Ditka's Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund.
All right, we're back on Thursday Night Tailgate. Bob, as we wait, either hopefully the opportunity to talk to Leonard Marshall or our good friend Paul Alexander joining us, wanted to kind of get your thoughts on you know, some of the other things going on the draft tonight, particularly Shane Ray. You know, Shane was arrested for marijuana possession. He was stopped on a routine traffic violation, and then they found a personal, I think is what they called it, amount of pot on him. As a guy, you know, who was originally, you know, top 10 potential player, is something like that, Bob, and John Gruden was talking about it earlier today, you know, to him it smacks of a, you know, poor judgment, a lack of judgment on his part, particularly this close to, you know, having your dream come true and potentially being a top 10 pick. Does something like that impact you, Bob? Would you put him down your draft board based on what just happened?
I think you have to, Chris. There's so many things that go into these picks. I mean, there are guys studying this more than you and I will ever do. And of course, the off-field stuff has to come into play these days. And you're right about Ray. That guy was probably a top 10 guy. He did incredible at Missouri. And he is probably, I've read things where he's probably going to be one of the last five picks in the first round. So a good team is going to get him. But it's one of those deals. He's too good of a player to pass up if he goes down that far, Chris. But that good team that gets him, they're just hoping that he kind of, quote-unquote, gets it, being in a classy franchise or something that can help this guy. But hey, again, some of these guys reform and some will not. And it is a crapshoot these days. And you can't blame some of these guys. The way the NFL is, Chris, you and I talk about it all the time. It's a win-now thing. Even these right. Bad teams only have a couple years to get it right. And if they pick a guy like this and he just goes down the tubes off the field-wise, you'll always look back at it and say, that cost us 3 years right there. So.
Yeah, no, exactly right, Bob. And, you know, to that end, you know, as the Steelers pick way down in the draft, and this guy could fall to them. So this is a perfect time to welcome in our next guest on the Kyven Foods guest line, Paul Alexander. Now, Paul has become a great friend of the show. And as a Steelers fan, you know, he's become my go-to guy for information for what's going on up in Pittsburgh. Paul's been the sports director at KDKA Radio AM 1020 and on the TV side as well. He's been a sports anchor and reporter for KDKA. He was the morning drive time host at Sports Radio 937, The Fan in Pittsburgh, and he does the pre- and post-game shows for the Pirates and Penguins for Root Sports, and we are certainly glad to have him back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Paul, how are things tonight in Pittsburgh?
Things are pretty exciting. It's draft night. It's always a big night in Pittsburgh, kind of a national holiday.
Indeed, it should be. Paul, Bob and I were just talking a little bit about Shane Ray and the issues, obviously, with, you know, him getting picked up for a small amount of pot and a traffic violation earlier, you know, just a few days ago. So I'm curious, you know, if he were to fall down the board and ended up in the Steelers' lap, is he a guy that they would consider?
You know, that is a very tough question. If they meet with him and feel comfortable and confident that this was just a kid being a kid and he made a stupid mistake, if they trust his character going forward, obviously he is a great player. To me, it'll be the interview process with the player. They will talk to coaches and other people that know this young man very well. If they're comfortable and confident that he's going to grow up and he's not going to be an off-the-field headache, wow, yeah, it's a tough call. Don't mind the public scrutiny that they'd go under for going ahead and selecting him. But they have to feel comfortable and confident that going forward, this kid's not going to be a problem.
Right. So, you know, and to that end, Paul, I mean, you know, guys, you know, the Steelers, you know, historically have been a team that shied away from guys who have had, you know, sort of off the field problems. You sort of get one chance, maybe two, if you're Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh, but usually those guys are few and far between. We've seen a bunch of, you know, former Steelers get jettisoned after having some run-ins with the law. You mentioned, you know, boy, you know, the flack that you would get for potentially taking a Shane Ray. Would that fly in Pittsburgh, Paul?
You know what? I think with Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert, I think the Steeler Nation trusts those guys pretty implicitly. And, you know, the scrutiny would be tough. There's no question about that. It's hard enough to make it, you know, making that leap from the college game to the NFL game. A lot of guys simply can't do it. And you can project as much as you want and as much as you can until they can go out on Sundays and prove that they can play. It's always going to be a big question mark. When you add other issues to that equation, it only muddies the water. So he's going to have to really stand out as far as a character guy that made a mistake as opposed to this guy's trouble. If they can determine that, of course it can fly.
Based on the needs, and it seems like the majority of the Steelers' needs, Paul, are on the defensive side. Can you imagine whenever, you know, when they get down to the Steelers here in the first round, would they go anyplace else besides defensive back or outside linebacker?
Unless somehow, some way, an Amari Cooper or somebody with unbelievable talent falls for some reason, no. They should pick, I think, you know, at least 80% of their picks should indeed be on the defensive side of the ball. They have very big needs at corner. They don't have really proven safety play right now. They're going to need additional outside linebackers. They have no depth there whatsoever. What they really need on offense would be Heath Miller's heir apparent.
Right.
I'm not sure they would go there in the first round, but they will certainly select a tight end during the course of this draft. But other than tight end, there really are not a lot of pressing needs on offense.
You know, Paul, no one's harder on Kevin Colbert for some of his picks over the last 7-8 years than I have been. Do you think he's done drafting 5'7", 170-pound running backs like Chris Rainey and Dree Archer? Can we see more of that?
Boy, I sure hope the experiment's over. I've been very critical of that as well. For whatever reason, Todd Haley always wants a component like that in his arsenal. There are guys in the NFL that are incredible in that role at that size. The Steelers certainly have not found that guy. They still have Dree Archer around, so we'll see how that plays out. He was primarily going to be a kick returner. That didn't pan out very well. So, yeah, I think that experiment is pretty much over, I would say.
Bob, questions for Paul?
Hey, Paul, it's a pleasure to speak again. And I've been looking at a few mock drafts throughout the week, and like you said, I think the Steelers are they're definitely in the market for a cornerback. And what I read, Paul, possibly a guy named Marcus Peters out of Washington. Now, this guy was one of among the best defensive players in the nation. But, again, he has some baggage himself. And so, again, if they don't get a guy, that fits into the system – or if they pass on a guy like Shane Ray, then you have to talk about a guy named Marcus Peters. It's gotten to the point, Paul, where you have to have a psychology with you in the war room. I mean, a psychologist. It's gotten so crazy, and it's not just there's a bunch of guys, as you know, Paul, throughout the first round that could have character issues. Is it really a crapshoot with a lot of these guys?
It really is, and, you know, the NFL draft, and it's fun to look back at, you know, I always look 3 years back and see, all right, how did this class pan out? How many guys are starters? How many guys are contributors from that particular draft? Even without character issues, it's a huge, huge crapshoot. There are a couple of corners, I think, that might supersede Marcus Peters in terms of a Kevin Johnson from Wake Forest. You look at a Byron Jones from UConn. These guys are comparable players without any of the issues that, you know, in a lot of ways grade out as better players maybe than a Marcus Peters, who, you know, obviously had issues with his coach, had issues with discipline. So to me, in the first round in particular, what you really want to do is eliminate outside forces that could lead to a distraction, that could lead to a reason for a guy not panning out. Even the best guys with the best character with great ability sometimes don't pan out. So to me, when the red flags are there, they're there for a reason, and you're probably better safer than you are sorry.
And Paul, do you think there's any pro teams out there who may be better at quote-unquote molding a questionable character than other possibilities? I mean, we've had some success here in New England, Belichick, maybe just the respect factor, but are there any other organizations out there who you think might do a good job with this kind of player?
Well, you need a coach that is pretty much completely in charge, and Mike Tomlin certainly has a Super Bowl ring, has 2 Super Bowl appearances. There's that respect. Belichick simply does not put up with any nonsense. They parade free agents around the practice facility during the season just to let every guy that's playing know we have other guys out there that are available and willing to step in if you're not going to get the job done. So the Steelers don't go to that extent to intimidate their own players like Belichick and the Patriots do. But, yeah, I think they can take, because of the strong leadership that they used to have, but now, you know, there's no Kiesel, there's no Polamalu, there's a lot of guys, there's no Dick LeBeau. There's not a lot of guys now that you really have as Steelers that are great players, great role models, and great leaders that are going to take a potentially troubled kid and say, hey, this is the way we do things here in Pittsburgh. So this probably would not be an ideal time to take a flyer on a kid that might have a character issue. I don't think the Steelers are built that way right now.
Paul, you mentioned a little bit ago about the potential of the Steelers maybe looking in the draft to get a tight end. Are you surprised that they didn't do anything in free agency to bring in a backup or a guy who could be a replacement or sub for Heath Miller, a guy like whether it's a Charles Clay or a Jordan Cameron or an Owen Daniels that were available in free agency?
The Steelers are always a secondary free agent market team, meaning that once cuts get made, come late July, early August, that's when they do a lot of their shopping. They've never been in a cap situation to really attack free agency in its early period. They haven't had cap room in the last 10 years. So to be active and to be a big player during the course of that early free agent period, they're just not in a position to do that. I think ideally that would have been nice. You want someone that's proven. You want someone that they can go out. They did that at the running back position, and that's even rare for them. But they had to because Le'Veon Bell's going to miss the first two games of the year. So they had to go out and, at least put a little stability at the running back position through free agency. So that was their splash. And I know Steelers fans get a little bit frustrated that Steelers are never players for that big-name free agent. They probably never will be. They build during the draft. They build with fringe free agents that other teams don't have room for or that other teams don't fit into their roster. And I don't think they're going to change the way they do business. I mean, they've had the James Ferriers. They've had some other big time. Ryan Clark was a nice free agent acquisition. But in general, they like to build with their own. They like to build through the draft.
Paul, we talked a little last time about Shamarco Thomas, and from what I'm reading, it's sounding like the starting safety position is his to lose. Is that the case? Is it his job to lose?
Well, if you can come up with another name of someone that's going to be there, it's kind of his to lose by default. That's why a guy like Landon Collins, the safety Alabama, would not be
right
in the first round if he's available. Because they do have a dire need at safety. They need depth at safety. So he has shown very little as far as the ability to command a starting role. But right now, you just look at the numbers, he has to be the guy that has to show something sooner rather than later.
One of our other guests tonight, Paul, is a guy who's been fantastic to us and becoming a regular as well, and that's John Bach. And John was the head coach of the Brooklyn Bolts last fall in the FXFL, that fall experimental league that they're trying out. And he was a guard for the Dolphins for many years. But the Steelers have a couple defensive backs on the roster that played for John last fall, and that's Jordan Dangerfield and Kevin Fogg. And Fogg is a guy that John Bach is quite high on. Do you think either one of those two guys have any shot at all making this team?
Absolutely, because right now they're not going to worry about where anyone came from. They just want to identify people that can play. As you know, right now in the NFL, you better have five reliable corners. You got to have a guy in the slot. You have to have the two guys on the outside. And then when you go with the dime, ideally you want to go with yet another corner because, right now they are so thin at safety. They need to really develop depth at corner. So yeah, anyone right now that has the ability to cover somebody is going to get a good long look at camp from the Steelers. There's no question about that.
So is next season a do or die season for Jarvis Jones? And how long do you think the leash is for him? And is it another possibility that James Harrison actually wins that starting right outside linebacker job?
It's a strong possibility. And it's so funny. You watch, James Harrison, he puts his workouts on Instagram that I check almost every day. And he is just such an incredible freak of nature that obviously has a little bit left in the tank. I think it would be disappointing to the Steelers if Jarvis Jones doesn't assert himself. I mean, here's a guy that was considered out of college to be the most ready to play outside linebacker the Steelers had ever drafted. And as we find out, he certainly was nowhere near ready to play at the NFL level.
Mm-hmm. Bob, more for Paul?
Paul, getting off the Steelers for just 1 minute, I wanted to get your spin on Jameis Winston and just a scenario, Paul. Say he stays healthy for his first few years. Is this the kind of guy who can win games on his own, Paul? Is he going to need guys around him? What do you project the type of quarterback he'll be down there?
Well, he's going to have to stay healthy. He's going to have to learn very quickly. He is extremely gifted. That arm is incredible. If you've ever seen him throw a baseball, you know the arm strength is pretty incredible. He seems to be one of those guys that understands and sees the game pretty well. But in college, what had maybe one or two options per play, there's six or seven different reads, and, you know, defenses now have to be as all out schematically as far as confusing opposing quarterbacks as they can be. To me, it's going to be not his athletic ability, because it's all there. It's going to be his ability to read defenses, to manage a game. I mean, can he do that at the NFL level? And that's the great unknown for any quarterback that makes that jump from college to the NFL. He's played in big games at a high level at Florida State. That's a huge plus to me. You know, these kids that come out of nowhere and haven't really played against really other NFL-type players in their entire collegiate career, they scare me a little bit because of the speed of the game might just freak them out. But that's not going to be the issue with Jameis. I mean, there's no question. Athletically, I mean, he absolutely deserved to be the number one overall pick. There is no question about that. The ceiling is extremely high. Will he get there? You know, a lot of people are already saying, you know, he's the next Jamarcus Russell, who certainly, you know, I think on draft night, you know, whenever he was picked 5 or 6 years ago, we were all singing his praises, that he was a can't-miss kid in the NFL.
He sure did. And don't mean to put you on the spot, Paul, but say over the last 20 years or so, has there been a guy where this draft night you said to yourself, he can't miss, and he ultimately did miss, like your Jamarcus Russell, or vice versa? Was there a guy that you say, he'll never make it, and he became an incredible pro? Any names come to mind?
One of my favorites, a guy, and I covered him in college, so I was always a huge Darren Perry fan. And, you know, the Steelers selected him, I believe, in the 7th round, and no one even gave him a shot to make the team. Through injuries, he ended up being the starting safety as a rookie. He started 99 consecutive games, had 30-plus picks, and to me, it was just one of those really unbelievable great stories. Too small and too slow by, you know, the Mel Kuypers of the world and all those guys that evaluate those kind of things. He would be just a guy, maybe because he was such a personal, you know, favorite of mine, that really stuck out as a guy that was very unheralded on draft day. There's so many of those great stories out there. As far as guys that I really thought were going to be great players and weren't, I'm trying to think of the I'm getting old, guys. the wide receiver taken in the 2nd round by the Steelers, Lymus Swede,
yes.
Lymus Swede is a guy that I told everybody that would listen, because of his wrist injury, he was a first-round talent taken, you know, in the 2nd round by the Steelers. I thought he was going to be an absolute steal. I thought he was going to be a great one. But Mike Tomlin has so many great sayings for guys. He said the lights were too bright, the stage was too big. And you wouldn't think that from a kid who was coming out of Texas when Texas was still at its peak.
You think
of the games he played at the collegiate level would have certainly prepared him for the NFL. But I was as wrong on Lymus Swede as you could be on anybody, because I really thought he was an absolute steal in the 2nd round.
Paul, the Steelers have got a tough schedule. The toughest in the NFL based on winning percentage this past year and next season. So, you know, which for them may be an actual blessing, because they can't seem to beat bad teams. I mean, they lost to the Raiders,
say, isn't
the Jets,
that the
best Bucks.
Thing the Steelers could ever have?
Yeah. I mean, it may work out to their benefit, but why is it they can't seem to beat the bad teams every year? I mean, the Raiders are on the schedule again next year, and I'm scared to death. You look at that game, you go, well, there's a loss, because they just can't beat the Raiders.
Right.
Why?
You know what, if anyone from that coaching staff, you know, from the entire front office of that organization could figure out why in the heck this team has the ability to play down to its competition, someone would write a book. Someone would become, you know, a Rhodes Scholar on, you know, it befuddles me. I've witnessed all of those games where they just were absolutely horrid against really bad teams. So, I would, even though you may look at that schedule as daunting, it's probably the best thing the NFL could have done for them.
You also cover the Penguins for Root Sports, and the Penguins started out the season as one of the best teams in the NHL. And by the end of the season, they were sort of lucky to hang on to get the eighth seed, and they were bouncing the first round for the second year in a row by the Rangers. They had a lot of injuries, particularly on defense, but they also had a lot of trouble scoring. What do you think this summer holds for the Penguins?
Well, I think it's a come to Jesus because, you know, right now, you know, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, they're not getting any younger. You don't want to become the 1990 version of the Atlanta Braves with just one World Series title to their name with that great core of pitchers and, you know, that great roster that they had. They won the division every single year, it seemed, in Atlanta, and they had one championship. And right now, the Penguins have one cup. They have the 09 cup, and that's it. So I am not going to hold anything against this team that went down to the best team in the NHL and the Rangers because the injuries were indeed everything. You know, people say they're not excuses, but no, they're reality. You give me Christian Eriksson, you give me Olli Maatta, you give me Chris Letang, and you give me Pascal Dupuis, and I think the Penguins are still playing right now. But the reality is those guys got hurt and they got bounced. So they're going to have to get, you know, some wingers. They know they need to do that. Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin need complementary players to play with them. And they haven't had that. And until they do get that, it's too easy to shut down individual players, but you can't shut down really proficient, you know, well-oriented and good chemistry with lines. You can't shut that down. But they need complementary players that they just don't have right now.
The excitement has been back, and let's switch gears to baseball, but the excitement has come back to Pittsburgh over the last few years based on Pirates baseball, and off to a little bit of a sluggish start, still really early. Some folks, you know, predicted, you know, this may be a World Series team. Can the Pirates hit enough, Paul, to be there in October?
Yeah, right now, I mean, they had won four straight games without Andrew McCutchen having a hit. And if you think back 2-3 years ago, that was unheard of. I mean, they went as far as Kutch led them. He was an MVP, you know. I mean, by all accounts, he was not just to the MVP. I mean, he was the Pirates' offense. But right now, top to bottom, this offense with the emergence of Jay Hay, and it looks like Pedro's got a nice swing back this year with the move to first base. Neil Walker is off to a great start. So I think they now have more balance offensively. You know, they are pitching lights out right now. They have one of the best rotations in terms of ERA in all of baseball right now. The bullpen's been a little shaky. They've actually blown a couple games, which is rare for this team. But, you know, there's nothing like a 162-game season to really showcase who has what it takes. I mean, we will certainly know, come mid-August where this team stands. But I certainly like their chances to go right down to the wire with St. Louis to win this very difficult National League Central. I think they're certainly a contender. I like the way the team is built. I think they're better equipped this year than they've been the last two, and those were two wild card years. And, you know, they won one of the wild card games. They came so close with taking care of St. Louis 2 years ago in that, you know, that best of seven series in the divisional series. Right. I like their chances. I really do. I like this team. I like the way it's built.
Paul, remind our listeners how they can follow you both online and over social media.
It is PAlexander44 on Twitter, and I'll be with you pretty much throughout the season on Root Sports doing Pirates pre- and post-game with my good friend Kent DeCalvi. So welcome all comments, welcome any interaction. I just enjoy this, and I love the opportunity to be with you guys. It's so much fun.
We can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to be a part of the show. You've become a great friend to us and to the show, and we really appreciate that. So, Paul, thanks for being here tonight. Happy draft night. Hopefully we see at 22 the Steelers do something good, and it's not a 170-pound running back. But in between now and the next time we get to talk to you, all the best to you and your family. We hope we get the opportunity to catch up with you real soon.
Guys, it's been a real pleasure. Enjoy draft night as well, and until next time, take care.
All right. Take care, Paul. Paul Alexander, what an outstanding guy, and what a great friend he has become on the show, Bob.
We mentioned it last time, Chris. You want to talk anything about Pittsburgh sports, and including hockey, baseball. Paul is the guy. He's got a little bit of a great analysis of everything, especially the Steelers, though. But yeah, it'll be a pleasure speaking with him down the road once the draft is over and the baseball season is continuing on. And it's always a pleasure speaking with Mr. Alexander.
Absolutely right. All right, now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Chad Finn, another guy who's become real important to us, not only here on TNT, but on the baseball side on our show View from the Lone Red Seat. Chad is a reporter for the Boston Globe, studied journalism at the University of Maine, Orno, where he was the sports editor at the Maine campus. Chad's column can be found every day in the sports section of the Globe, plus on Boston.com. And you can also read his blog, Touching All the Bases, on Boston.com as well. And we are excited to have him back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Chad, Chris and Bob, thanks for being a part of the show.
You bet, guys. I appreciate the Maine reference. It makes it seem like it was more recent than it actually was.
Always there to help you, my friend. So, Chad, since there's no way to read into the mind of Bill Belichick and what he might do, what do you think the Patriots are looking for when we get all the way down to the end of the first round tonight?
I'm not one of those people who yelps every time they trade out of the first round because they've had success doing so. It's not sexy, it's not flashy, and it kind of ticks you off, I guess, if you're a Patriots fan waiting up to the end of the first round to see them pick only to have them make a deal right after number 31 goes. But it wouldn't surprise me if that's what happens because that 32 pick has a lot of appeal to other teams just based on the fact that, well, first of all, that there might be a player they like there. But the other thing is you get an extra year in the contract with the first rounder. It's a year longer, so you get the guys locked up a little bit more. If there's a guy you really like at the top of the second round and you think he's going to be a player, it's probably worth it to try to trade into that first round, get that little bit longer term deal. So it wouldn't surprise me if they deal out of that. If they stay in it, I think people have done a pretty good job of gauging the kind of players the Patriots like in recent years going into the draft and don't get quite as surprised as they used to. Mel Kiper is still shell-shocked that they took Logan Mankins in 2005 because he had him as a third or fourth rounder, and he was just dumbfounded by the pick. Now those things don't catch us off guard because they're looking for someone to fit their system who fits a certain set of skills that they look for, whatever the position is. They don't shoehorn guys in to fit with them. They find guys who fit. And so you can kind of identify some people. I think Lakin Tomlinson, the guard from Duke, fits a Patriots profile. Later on, there are a couple of receivers that you can see being here. Lockett from Kansas State's one who's talked about as a third or fourth round pick. People like Byron Jones from UConn a lot as a cornerback, but he's probably going to be gone in the first round before they get around. But he's someone who is very early on targeted as a Patriots potential pick. So you can kind of get a read or kind of identify if you put in the legwork on players who might have appealed to the Patriots. And I think a lot of people last year hit on Dominique Easley as their first round pick. And he was a guy who maybe a lot of people didn't see going there, or the national scouting type of guys. But I think if you really focus on what the Patriots look for position by position and what they try to do, you can get a pretty good guess at who they're going to pursue.
The most recent pick here by the Jets at number six is Leonard Williams, the defensive end out of USC. Surprised the Jets would go defense as opposed to trying to help out and bolster that offense a little more.
Not in that case, because there's an argument for Williams as the best player in the draft, that he's someone who could have gone as high as second. There's a sense that he's a sure thing, that maybe the ceiling as a pass rusher isn't elite, but he's going to be a very dependable player, good kid, run stopper, someone who is going to have a long career in the league. Even if he's not a 14-sack guy, maybe he's an 8 or 9 or sack a year guy. That's still a good player. I'm dumbfounded by the Jets right now because they're doing smart things and we're not used to that around here. They arguably got the best defensive player in the draft, one of the best prospects in the draft. They stole him at six. This was Bill Belichick getting him at that spot. We'd all be firing off confetti rockets and celebrations. So you got to give them credit. They got a really good player at a really good spot. And for once, the Jets didn't botched the pick, and it's not going to be added to that highlight reel that we see every year of all their Blair Thomas and Jeff Lagerman right. and all those guys. They got a good one here, and it's a whole new world. We're going to have to get used to it.
Earlier today, I read Eric Frenz's piece on Boston.com about the Pats potentially taking Arizona State wide receiver Jalen Strong. You mentioned a moment ago there's going to be some wide receivers that may be available later on in the draft that the Pats might be interested in. If Strong is somehow on the board, would that be a guy that would be too good to pass up to pair along with Edelman and LaFell?
No, I don't think so. I think the position thing would surprise me, that them taking a wide receiver in the first round. I just don't think that's something that they – I don't think they've ever done it since Belichick's been here. They've taken quite a few in the second round. Deion Branch in 02, Chad Jackson in 06, who didn't pan out. Taylor Price was a third rounder. Brandon Tate was a third rounder. So they've taken some guys relatively high. And it missed, and you could say, well, they miss on receivers, but a lot of players miss. I don't think you can say the Patriots failed drafting at that particular position. The guys they've drafted just haven't worked out. I think there's just as good a chance of them hitting on somebody as missing on it if they identify one they like. But I don't think they take any receiver in the first round. I think there are probably other priorities there. But Strong's one. I heard Christian Fourier say the same thing today. He pegged him as their first-round pick. I don't think it happens, but he certainly has a skill set. He's fast. He ran a 4.4, supposedly a good route runner to be someone who could come in and help the Patriots. This is a team that just won the Super Bowl with Julian Edelman as their number one wide receiver. Brandon LaFell as a former third-round pick who they got at a fairly bargain rate. That's not a position that they put any priority on, and I wouldn't expect them to put a priority on it in round one.
Bob, questions for Chad?
And, Chad, I agree with you about Byron Jones from UConn. Isn't it amazing, Chad, what 1 year could do? Last year at this time, if you said Byron Jones, first-round NFL draft pick, you'd look at somebody cross-eyed. But he had the incredible pro day, as everyone knows, put his name on the map, and all of a sudden we're totally familiar with a guy that's probably one of the most athletic guys in the entire draft. But like you said, Chad, I don't think he'll be around at number 32, but he would be nice. And I know New England's got their eye on him. But let me ask you a question about pretty much the same I asked Paul Alexander about character issues. Chad, we know New England has had let's just say they've done pretty well getting guys here and kind of molding them to the system. Do you think they put a huge – do they put a huge emphasis on character, or do they think to themselves, hey, we're the Patriots. If they can't play with us, they're going to play nowhere?
I think it's a case-by-case basis, really. I think they look at the player, look at what the baggage is, look at his skill set, and ask themselves, all right, is it worth it? Is this guy going to get worse once he gets the NFL money, or is he a kid who's growing up? What can we expect from him? Does he have a support system in place? All these questions that you have to do your due diligence on. Maybe there's added emphasis for them after the Aaron Hernandez situation. I don't think that's anything you can ever expect. They knew he had baggage. They knew he failed at least one drug test at Florida, Urban Meyer. Maybe he's revised the story a little bit, but he tells us that he told Belichick that you need to keep Hernandez away from his hometown guys. So maybe New England wasn't the best place for him in the first place. But I think that's just an example that you cannot plan for. And you don't dismiss any kid with a little bit of baggage, whether we're talking about Shane Ray or to a little bit worse degree, Randy Gregory or somebody like that, just because they have baggage and because you had a really horrible experience with a player who did recently. The Patriots brought in Rolando McClain while Aaron Hernandez was on trial. They brought in Rolando McClain for a visit. He's a guy who has a ton of baggage, weapons charges, all kinds of things went on when he was with the Ravens and the Raiders. Seemed to have straightened himself out in Dallas, but he's still a guy who you would say, if the Patriots were shying away from those kind of players, they wouldn't even look cross-eyed at Rolando McClain. And instead, they offered him a contract. He ended up going back to Dallas. But that's a pretty good indication that if there's a character issue who they think can play, they will still take a shot at that guy and try to bring in that guy if they feel like it's worthwhile.
Chad, I want to get your opinion about Gronkowski. I mean, I think, of course, he's a national name, and people know who he is everywhere. But especially us here in New England we're so right on top of how valuable this guy is. And he's got to be one of the most valuable guys in the league, and he won't get the votes like, you know, the quote-unquote prettier positions. But just maybe for our audience, you can probably try to explain what I'm trying to explain, Chad, what this guy means when he's in the game as opposed to when he was out. It's a totally different team, even though it's the Patriots.
Sure, he changes everything. The argument can be made that he's the most dynamic tight end ever to play the game. He's 25 years old, and you can build that case already just in terms of what he's put up for numbers, the touchdowns, everything he's done while he's healthy, the team's success record while he's healthy. If he hadn't been hurt in that Super Bowl against the Giants when he ran his first route and they're all screaming, decoy, decoy, he can't run, they probably have another championship. If he didn't blow out his knee with the T.J. Ward hit the previous year, who knows what goes on with the Patriots then. He's a game-changing player. He's as good a pass receiver as there is in football, and he's an outstanding blocker for a tight end. If he had hands of stone, he would be in the league because of his blocking. He would be somebody's blocking tight end, Matt Mulligan or somebody like it, or one of his brothers, you know, somebody like that. And he's a charismatic guy, really likable guy. I know people get tired of the bro stuff with him and the frat boy stuff, but if you ever talk to him, you ever see him in action or when he's with kids, it's just how he is. Tom Brady said it best. He said, Gronk never has a bad day. And that combined with his talent makes him a really easy and fun guy to root for. If he stays healthy, he's headed to a Hall of Fame career. And if he stays healthy, I mean, we saw the pattern this year. Tom Brady was healthy. Gronk was healthy. Darrell Revis stayed healthy the whole year, and they won the Super Bowl. And those three guys were their three best players far and away.
Chad, as you mentioned, you know, Darrell Revis, who's obviously no longer there now with the Jets. The Patriots, though, nine quarterbacks on their cornerbacks on their roster currently. So is that position solid in their minds, even with the loss of Revis?
It seems to be. I mean, the speculation that they're going to change their whole scheme, go back to zone coverage, which is what they did for a couple of years when they didn't have the cornerbacks. Revis was such a man-to-man specialist that they kind of tailored things around him, as you should. They believe Malcolm Butler is the player that we saw in the Super Bowl. He's such a fascinating case because he went undrafted out of West Alabama, and it turned out that his pro day numbers were all messed up. He ran like a 4.35 or whatever it was, 40, and they put him down for like a 4.8, and the kid didn't get drafted. The Patriots had seen him on tape and said, all right, he's faster than that. Let's take another look at this kid. And he ended up being a storybook tale with his performance in the Super Bowl, but it wasn't just that play he made to save the game. He made several plays in that game after he came in relief for Kyle Arrington, who was struggling and really looked like a guy who can contribute. And you hear things now that they believe he's going to be a very, very good cornerback. They have depth there. They have established depth, guys who have been regulars in the league, whether it's Arrington, Alphonso Dennard, who slipped off the radar a little bit last year, but has had some success. Logan Ryan, who took a step back in his second year, but had a very good rookie season. Maybe they draft somebody. I suspect they do probably in the first couple of rounds here. You know, they brought in free agents like Bradley Fletcher, guys who bounced around a little bit. So it'll shake out. They did re-sign Devin McCourty, who's a great rangy safety, former cornerback. So the pass coverage isn't completely shot after losing Revis, but they probably could use a rookie to come through here and give them a little bit of boost there. But it's not all lost. It's just not as good as it was last year by any stretch.
How much is the loss of Vince Wilfork going to hurt next season? And is D-tackle, you think, something that's high on their list tonight or over the weekend to get somebody else in through the draft?
Yeah, you know, honestly, probably not much. Wilfork was a great player here, and he had a pretty good season last year, better than you could expect coming back from an Achilles injury. A guy that size of blood is Achilles. It's almost a surprise that he came back at all, but he did and played pretty well. But they also had run issues early in the year. He was sort of responsible for that. He He had good games. He had games where he looked like somebody who was a declining player. And the Patriots have a long track record of getting rid of guys, letting guys go at the right time. I think they probably did that with Wilfork. They have good depth there, pretty good quality there right now. Alan Branch, who they signed during the season, they re-signed him this offseason. He played very well. Silver Saliga played well when he was healthy. And last year's first-round pick, Dominique Easley, kind of had a lost rookie year. He's coming back from a knee injury, but they're still very high on him. They feel like they're in a pretty good situation there in the defensive line. It's probably an area, again, that they address with one pick somewhere along in this draft, but it's not a hugely pressing issue. Vince Wilfork's a big name. He's a great player. He's going to have an interesting Hall of Fame case when the time comes, but they probably let him go at the right time.
Behind Dante Tower and Jamie Collins and Gerard Mayo, the Pats appear to be thin at linebacker. Do you think they look for a depth later in the draft at linebacker?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they brought in Jabal Sheard, the pass rusher, who kind of fits that hybrid defensive outside linebacker, defensive end skill set that they've really had a hard time finding since Willie McGinnis retired. Rob Ninkovich gives them sort of the same thing. He's sort of their current version of Mike Vrabel, probably one of the more unsung players in the league. He's so productive, so smart. And it's really become an essential guy in the Patriots. He still gets overshadowed a little bit by bigger names. Collins looked like he was going to be an all-pro last year. He didn't have a great Super Bowl, but he just kept getting better and better over the course of the season. Hightower, who was played the Super Bowl with a serious shoulder injury, assisted on the tackle on Lynch near the goal line that preceded the interception. So this guy is incredibly tough. He's out 8 months, so he should be healthy right around the time camp starts, but this is a guy who's not going to be pumping any iron or anything like that. Had the serious injury. You wonder if that impacts him, but given that they just picked up his fifth-year option, I think they feel pretty good about him coming back and continuing to be a really dependable, smart player in the heart of that defense and getting better and better. So, yeah, they might pick a linebacker here, but going into next season, they have to feel much, much better about that position than they did going into the last season when they weren't sure what Collins was going to be. And Hightower had been a guy who was a first rounder a couple years previous and really hadn't panned out the way they had hoped to see those two guys take leaps forward and look like they're going to be perennial Pro Bowlers. It's pretty huge in terms of how that linebacking position is perceived now regarding the Patriots.
Bob, one more for Chad before we let him go.
Sure, Chad. Just since the Super Bowl, all I've kept thinking, Chad, is if I'm a member of the Seattle Seahawks and what that loss did to me mentally and how I can go into training camp in July with a mindset of, well, let's just do it all over again. How fragile must these can they be mentally, Chad? I mean, after what happened, is it going to get ugly out there before it gets really good again?
Yeah, that's a good question because I've never been a Pete Carroll guy. I think he's a pretty good motivator until things start to go wrong, but because he gives the players a lot of leeway, he gets taken advantage of. We saw that during the gradual decline of the post-Parcells Patriots during his three seasons as coach, where they went 10-6, 9-7, 8-8, and then he was fired. And it was just the inmates running the asylum, these guys who were disciplined players under Parcells and who were disciplined players again when Belichick came in, they did whatever they wanted with Carroll. And I wonder if he's still that guy. I thought Seattle was going to fall off last year after winning the Super Bowl, and it's to Carroll's credit and to the players' credit that they really didn't. But after what they went through losing the Super Bowl and to have that kind of hanging over them and to have a very questionable decision call made by their coach. I wonder if they have the faith in him that they did before. And it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, they got Jimmy Graham, so they're probably feeling pretty good about that acquisition. And I know they're trying to deal Bruce Irvin and get a high pick in this draft. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that team, if their talent can overcome sort of the mental stuff that they're going to have to deal with.
Chad, before we let you go, you know we can't end without having at least one question about the Red Sox. You know, the starting pitching, you know, Porcello had a nice start last night, but the starting pitching has been pretty atrocious overall. What do you think they need to do from a starting pitching perspective, and could they still pull the trigger on a Cole Hamels deal?
I think they ought to bring back Pedro Martinez, don't you? He could still throwing 85 miles an hour. He still knows what to do out there. But, he'll have to leave for the Hall of Fame ceremony for a few days. But other than that, no, I think they eventually get Hamels. Philly seems to have realized they're not getting Blake Swihart or Mookie Betts or any of the real elite Red Sox young players. But the Red Sox have enough in their farm system to put together an interesting package. There'll be other teams in on Hamels. I mean, maybe the Cardinals with Wainwright being out. Brandon McCarthy's out for the Dodgers. They can certainly afford him. Darvish went down for the Rangers. Maybe if they're contenders, they get in. But the Red Sox have enough there without giving up their guys, the guys they think are going to be cornerstone players, to make a deal without parting with any of them. I think Hamels ends up here. As far as what they have now, you know, I never bought the five number three starters is as good as having a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But these guys aren't as bad as they've pitched either. I thought they'd be mediocre. They've been bad. I think they get to the point where they're mediocre. Porceau is going to be the best one of the bunch. Buchholz is going to be an enigma as always. And we'll see how it shakes out with Miley, Kelly, and Masterson. But they're going to be better, particularly Miley and Kelly. I think Masterson may end up in the bullpen at some point. But Miley and Kelly are a couple of guys who are going to be at least adequate.
All right. I hope you're right. Chad, thanks for
I don't like them either, but they'll go out and get somebody. They're just sort of being patient here, and you can afford to do that when you have the offense that they have.
Right. Yeah, well, Buchholz is driving both Bob and I nuts, and he has for the last few years. So to your point, the enigma. But hopefully they come around. Chad, thanks for joining us tonight. It's always a privilege to have you either on this show or on with us on the Red Sox side on the View from the Lone Red Seat. We hope you'll continue to come back and share your thoughts and insights with us, because you're always fantastic.
You bet. I appreciate that. And we'll have to do the Red Sox one soon. Anytime, guys.
Take care.
All right. Take care, Chad. All the best to you and your family.
Same to you guys. Take care, folks.
All right. Good night. Chad Finn from the Boston Globe. And Bob, I hope he's right, because another stinker from Buchholz, you know, and the next go around might throw both you and me over the edge.
Chris, you know, I know this is a football show, but have you and I ever had a conversation about Buchholz and the word enigma has never come up?
Yeah, right, has it been in there?
Chad threw it in there this time, but yeah. But, hey, let's just hope he's – I think he's right. You know, they're not as bad as they pitched, but they still got to get a lot better to just be a 500 team here.
That's right. All right, now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is our good friend and former Dolphins and Jets guard and last season's head coach of the Brooklyn Bolts and the FXFL, John Bach. Hey, John, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well. How are y'all?
Oh, we're fantastic. It's draft night. It's pretty close to Christmas for NFL fans, right?
Yeah, for NFL fans, but not for prospects. And I remember my draft day, it was the worst day of my life. And then spending all day with my parents, and even my parents got fed up with it day two of the draft and went home early. So yeah, the draft day is not really good for too many people other than the top five picks. And then everybody else sits there and says, you know, I got picked 30 picks late. And in my case, it was 200 picks too late.
That's right. John, one of the guys from your alma mater, the University of Louisville, safety Gerard Holloman, is someone I'd love to see in Pittsburgh, because they clearly need help in the defensive backfield with the retirement of Troy Polamalu and Ike Taylor as well. What do you know about Holloman?
You know, he's a good player. I don't see too much Louisville down here in South Florida, so I try to follow it the best that I can. But, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers have already taken two of my corners, my safety and my corner. So, you know, as much as I'm rooting for the kid from Louisville, I'm kind of rooting for the kids from Brooklyn, too.
Yeah, so to that point, we talked to DePaul Alexander from Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh Sports a little while ago, and I mentioned the fact that the Steelers have Kevin Fogg and Jordan Dangerfield, the two players you're alluding to, on the roster. And I said, you know, do these kids, you think they have a legitimate shot of making the team? And he said, absolutely, they do. Talk about it. I know when we were talking with you, earlier in the year, you were pretty high on Fogg.
Well, I like Kevin Fogg, and you know, Kevin came into training camp, and just because of the time frame that we were on and kind of how things worked, he wasn't a starter for us. And his agent called, and the commissioner called me, and everybody does all those same things as a head coach that you get, you know, trying to put their influence in. But the previous time it happened, you know, the best player on my team, I cut him when it happened. And so Kevin Fogg, you know, I went to our defense coordinator, and again, we were watching him in practice and doing all these good things, and I didn't care about the influence that I was under to play him or not. And I finally went to our defense coordinator and our special teams coach, Nate Poole and Joey Smith, and said, you know, this kid's pretty dang good. I want to see him in the rotation. And as soon as I put him in the rotation, he scored 14 points, you know, between the kickoff return, a punt return, this and that. So my, you know, the last day we were checking out of the hotel, and he was there. And and I had to go, and he actually had Kareem Huggins' helmet in his room. They were roommates. Kareem Huggins from Hofstra, who I think the world of and can't believe that kid's not in the NFL. And the kid is such a good kid, he could have kept the helmet and nobody would have said anything. Instead, he called me to get the helmet back. And when I went to his room to pick the helmet up, while everybody else is pretty much gone, flights were going out at 6-7 o'clock in the morning, he goes, "Coach, I'm really sorry, my agent called." He goes, "I hope that wasn't the reason." I go, "You know," I go, "the other guy that pulled that, I fired him." I go, "You played because you were good enough." And I go, "You need to remember that for the rest of your life." And that's what I said to him right before he signed with Pittsburgh.
That's fantastic. Good for you. John, you know, when I look at the body of work that you had, you know, with the Brooklyn Bolts and you guys, it was a short season. You played 4 games, went 4-0, sort of league champs there. But you had 12 guys from that Bolts team go on to, you know, play on a roster now somewhere within the NFL. So, you know, that number is outstanding. But when you add in the fact that you had 7 more play in the CFL and 5 more play in the Arena League, 24 of the 36 guys you had on your roster are now playing professional football on some level or another. So 2/3 of your roster has moved on. If that doesn't speak to what a great head coach you are, I don't know what does. I mean, that's got to be a heck of a resume builder for you.
Well, not really. You know, nobody really paid attention to it. I've been after one job this year, a Division III job, University of Wisconsin, Whitewater, where I'm from, and I didn't even get an interview. So nobody really cares about it. I think what I did differently, and you know, I've been in this type of league before. You know, I've sat there, and I was in the World League, and I've been around these guys who have been drafted and fired. I mean, Kurt Warner's one of these guys. Kurt Warner played in the World League.
Right.
What I did was is I put a staff together of ex-players who could coach. So the rhetoric and the speech that we had in our meetings every day was completely different than a polished NFL coach. These were guys who were real with these kids and understood what they were going through and could speak to them in a language they understood. And I did that for one specific reason. I remember being in Oakland with, you know, Bill Callahan was my coordinator and John Gruden was my head coach. And John Gruden had a great way of getting to players. And I think Bill Callahan is probably the smartest football coach and most dedicated football coach you're ever going to meet. But the one thing I always remembered was in our meetings, he would sit there and speak in a dialect that nobody understood. And I remember looking around the room and just seeing blank looks on guys' faces when he would talk. Because when you talk about installation and how you install a play and how you install a scheme, you have to engage the players to understand what you're really trying to say. And when you speak in a vocabulary that they're not used to, you'll never get the response that you want. So, for example, this is how Bill Callahan would install, you know, a pass protection. He would say something similar to, "As the schematic clearly dictates, when force comes from number 4, there is pressure in the B gap and on number 3. So you have to redirect and reemphasize the integrity of the protection by doing this, 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 and this." And you look around the room and you see guys with Wunderlich scores about 11, and he had no idea what he was talking about because he's using 3 and 4 syllable words. So So the one thing that we did with our coaching staff, I said, look, let's keep it simple. We only have 4 or 5 weeks to get these guys ready. Let's be direct, and let's really focus on what's going to make them a better football player. And it's going to be about work ethic. It's going to be about effort. It's going to be about practice tempo. And it's going to be about understanding a simple scheme that we can develop their skills to get them better.
Seems to make sense.
It worked. I don't know if it makes sense or not, but it worked.
That's it. John, one of your other players is a guy who is a great friend of the show. Mike Golic Jr. has been on with us many times. He joined us a couple weeks ago. He has since signed a 2-year deal with the Saints. So we're very happy for Mike. Have you had a chance to talk to Mike and help him give him some words of encouragement as he gets another chance to go play in New Orleans?
You know, I haven't spoken to Mike, but I really, if you guys talk to him, tell him he's got to call me and he's got to come to Florida for 2 days. You know, I understand the system that he's going into. Sean Payton's an ex-Indiana State guy. I was an Indiana State guy for 1 year. Sean and I have been in the Bahamas together. I understand what he does. And there's a couple little things on Mike's game that I would really like to sit down and talk with him. As his head coach, I couldn't do it. But as a position coach, you know, I could. And James Brown and I are always on the same page, but James Brown was a talented right tackle, not a center. And that's really the one thing about Mike. I think Mike's good enough. The kid's brilliant. He's a born leader. He's everything you want your son to grow up to be. And I wish I had 3 more days with him to get him ready for Saints camp.
All right. Well, we'll certainly pass that message along. Bob, questions for John?
John, I think we've touched on this a little bit already. Chris and I talked earlier in the show about the NFL draft and character issues and what teams have to watch out for or whatever. And I'm sure during your coaching career, John, you've had guys that didn't have the most squeaky clean background, but somehow you got them to play for you and locked into a system. Is there a recipe for it, John, or is it you just have to have a way of relating to people that a lot of coaches don't have?
That's a great question. And, the way I go about things, is something that I believe in. And, even when I was at the Dolphins, I was a union rep, even though I was, a 6-man. I was not a great player for them. I was a great player when I had to be, but I wasn't someone who was, getting the big contract and doing all that, but I had the respect of my players. And I think people know when you're a truthful, honest person trying to do a job and trying to get the most out of somebody. The disconnect between coaches and players is getting greater. Social media, all these things. The younger generation is doing things at a different pace than the older generation is. And when you become a, call them a tenured coach, let's call it tenure. So you've been at, Illinois, and then you went to Nebraska, and then, you were 2 years with the Houston Oilers or the Houston Texans, and you went through that route. I think that the coaches speak and the players get divided. Now, the one thing that I did was I brought in three consultants this year to help me with my team. I brought in Mike Westhoff of the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins special teams. I brought in Tom Olivadotti from the Carolina Panthers and the Miami Dolphins. He's got famous for his books. And I brought in Danny Hope, former head coach of Purdue, to help me with my offense, which was the same one that they ran with Drew Brees and Tiller. What I was surprised about was the ability for them to speak in common terms for kids to really to understand. And I think, and when I watch the modern day game and I watch what's going on, and, you guys have seen my post about things that I see on Facebook and everything else. Offensive line coaches, and I think a lot of coaches, are behind the transition of the game right now. And they're doing things, but they don't understand why they're doing them. And there was a perfect example I put up last week on my Facebook. They tried to block a power wham play. And it was completely blocked wrong. And there was, and the quote was about this guard's down block that was so great, and he knocked this kid out. But when you look at it from a coach's standpoint and from a player standpoint, the scheme didn't work. And that's the one thing I think is people are struggling on how to catch up to these new types of offenses, whether it's wildcat, read zone, read option. I mean, when like Mike, even with Mike Golic and everybody else, when they came into my system, they've only been in two pass blocking schemes. It's always slide. It's mini slide or it's big slide. They have no idea how to multiple read. And that would, you know, and let me give you an example of multiple reads. So you're talking about kids right now that are pass blocking that only have to block a gap. And they just got to know what gap to go to, and they don't have a player. All they have to have is whoever runs through that gap. 10 years ago, it was completely different. Completely different. You had to understand who the count was, what the count was, and know which way to go from the count. So again, when I talk about, you know, the Oakland Raiders and then Gruden, who then went to Tampa and won the Super Bowl at Tampa, here's what I was told. All right. You got Warren Sapp on you and a Y3 technique, 4-eye. You got to block Warren Sapp. But if Derek Brooks blitzes inside of you, you got to let Sapp go and pick up Derek Brooks. That is a whole, let me see. I got to take a guy who's in the Hall of Fame and I got to block him. But if the other Hall of Fame player goes, I got to block him instead. That is a completely different numbering system, matching system than we're doing today. And a lot of the kids that I've had, especially offensive linemen, had a hard time understanding the transition to the pro game.
Yeah, very, very true. And one more about coaching in general, especially at the pro level, John. It seems like they're giving coaches these days, doesn't matter who you are, what team you end up with, good, bad, or whatever, they're giving coaches about 2-3 years. You don't win and you're out. Is that really fair, John, or is that just business as usual now?
It's not fair. It's a driven policy by ticket sales and by media and fan support and the rest of those things. And you look at guys, you know, and there's a couple theories to that. One is sometimes people wear out their welcome and they need to leave. And that's okay. You know, that's why guys belong in college and not the NFL. And Howard Schnellenberger told me that years ago. He said, I couldn't coach in the pros because I'm a college coach. And you look at a guy like Harbaugh has the same kind of thing. Where after 5 years, you're tired of him. And that's the same with Nick Saban, who's a great college coach and everything else. So there's a difference between coaching college and coaching the NFL. Now, in the NFL, Parcells could get away with that personality for some reason. But, you know, a guy like Coughlin has gotten away with that personality. But very few other head coaches can. And you have to have the right locker room. You have to have all those things. But coaching in the NFL is extremely difficult. You have players making a lot more money than you are, yet you have to get them all rowing in the same direction. And if you're not a proven winner, you may lose it. So as a good head coach, you got to make sure you clean the locker room up whenever you have to. And that's what the good organizations do. You look at you look at Belichick. If you weren't on board with Belichick, you are fired. Jimmy Johnson, you know, how many third-round picks has Jimmy Johnson cut in his career? Because if you weren't on board with what we were doing, you were getting fired. And certain guys can pull that when you win. But when you're not winning, you can lose a locker room real easy in the NFL. Because there's not the fear that's there in college football.
John, you have one of the great football minds that we have the opportunity to talk to regularly on this show. We thank you so much for sharing what you know and the things that you see. To your point, you point out so many great things on Facebook, and you're a great follow on Facebook. Tell our listeners how they can follow you on Facebook and any place else that you are on social media.
I'm almost a fan page now, and I'm too socially illiterate to go to Twitter, so I'm almost up. I think I get 4,900 people. At 5,000, I get to a fan page. I got to try to figure that out. So thank God I got young kids that can help me. But then I don't really ask to be followed or anything else. I'm a person who likes to give my opinion and give insight from someone who's on the inside for the most part.
Yeah.
I've had some success. You know, again, I'm not, you know, no one's put me in Canton, but that's fine with me. I do what I do, whether it's little kids or big kids or whatever they are. I just try to teach the game the best way that I know how.
Yeah. And you know, for those that haven't friended you already, the last 100 that can get in because the stuff that John shares on his Facebook page is educational. If you love the game of football, John's going to tell you how to play it right and give you a lot of great insights. John, we thank you so much for being a part of the show and being such a great friend.
No worries, but I've been very lucky. Think about who I've been around in my life. Every coach I've been around is a Hall of Fame coach from the time I was 8 years old. So, I mean, my bad coaches are guys who were in the Hall of Fame. I played with 27 Hall of Famers or against them. So I've played for Marv Levy. I've played for Jimmy Johnson. I've played for John Gruden. I've played for Tom Bresnahan, who invented the zone. You know, I've been with so many different people. And, you know, I said, even a guy like Callahan that we talked about tonight, I think he's brilliant. The things that he brings to the table are brilliant. So I've been exposed to all these different types of personalities and people, and what better than to share it with somebody? None of this comes from me. It comes from being in the right system at the right time and listening to smart people and then coming up with a conclusion based on whatever all the other smart people have told you.
There you go. That's how you do it, right? You learn from the best and then you pass that along, which is exactly what you're doing. So kudos to you, John.
Well, you guys do a great job, and I really appreciate being on, and I guess I'll see you in a month, and I like the way the draft went down. The draft is going down just as it's supposed to, and hopefully the Miami Dolphins were going wide receiver or tight end. I'd even take a tight end at 14 or trade the pick. Trade the pick and get a third that we lost. So that would be my comment to the Miami Dolphins.
We'll see how it works out. John, thanks for being here, and certainly all the best to you and your family.
All right, have a great night.
All right, catch up soon. Take care, John. John Bach, and Bob, I mean it sincerely, I said it in the opening and I said it in his intro, he has got one of the best football minds out there, and he is certainly underappreciated and underrated as a guy who deserves to be a head coach somewhere.
And Chris, not because he's a regular on this show, we've talked to him so many times, I don't know if we've ever spoken to a guy who is quote-unquote outspoken, but incredibly, incredibly intelligent, more than a John Bach. So, and that whole Wisconsin Whitewater, I don't get that, how he could not be interviewed when he was basically, you know, lobbying for – he was the perfect candidate, Chris. And I don't know what those administrators were thinking about, going a different direction or whatever. But a hometown guy like that, letting him go,
right.
I don't get that. But we won't be talking to the Whitewater people anytime soon.
All right, before we get to our next guest, Dante Marsh, I want to give a quick shout out to our good friend Renee Schell at Integrated Play. If you're either already in job transition or you want to be in job transition, make sure you go to integratedplay.org online and see what Renee can do to help you. We all like to do business and take advice from someone who actually has our best interests at heart and who you can trust. Well, you're not going to find someone who fits that description better than Renee Schell at Integrated Play. She's smart, she's talented, and the kind of person you want to work with and to have working for you. She does such great things, above and beyond things. And by the way, when I say above and beyond things, go check out ThursdayNightTailgate.com, the redesigned website. She helped and did all the work getting that piece done, and it's simply outstanding. So she does such great things for our guests and for us every single week. So you need to check out Renee. I'm telling you, folks, she's just the very best. There isn't another way to describe Renee. If you work with her for 2 minutes, you're going to understand why we say that every single week on this show. If you're an athlete or anyone in job transition, do yourself a favor and reach out to Renee. You're going to be very glad you did. Go to integratedplay.org online. Give her a follow on Twitter at Integrated Play. All right. Now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line, back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line, I should say, is Dante Marsh. Let me remind you about Dante's background. He's from Oakland, California, played his college ball at Fresno State. Had a brief stint in the NFL with the Tennessee Titans before injuries cost him the 2001 season. Signed as a free agent with the BC Lions in 2004 and has been a defensive back for the Lions for the last 11 years. Currently a free agent. He was an integral part of their Grey Cup championship teams both in 2006 and in 2011. Was a three-time Western All-Star and an overall CFL All-Star in 2008. He is the BC Lions' all-time leader in total tackles and tied for the record for most tackles in a game. Like I say, he's currently a free agent. We are so hoping that someone, whether it's the Lions, come to their senses or someone else does the right thing and signs him soon. In the meantime, we're honored to have him with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Dante, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming on back on the show.
Welcome back.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It's been a minute. I know I was supposed to be on last time, and I totally brain farted on the East Coast, West Coast time.
No worries. So, Dante, I know you're 36 years old, but I also have seen, you know, your workouts. I've seen some of the video on your workouts. I know you work out hard. You're staying in shape. Your stats the last few years wouldn't suggest there's any sign of a slowdown in you. How do you feel about what your current status is, and when's someone going to do the right thing and get you in camp?
I don't know. Like I said, I've been an all-star a few more times than what y'all noted, but
is that right? I'm sorry.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, here's the thing. I put together a pretty good career. I haven't had a chance to really sit back and smell the roses till as of late, but I don't know. I guess, you know, they cheap and young is where we want to go. I mean, in the case of the BC Lions, it's a rebuild. So, you know, it's a part of the business and I understand it. However, the only thing that bothered me was the way it went down. It was unsettling because I've spent my whole CFL career up there, you know, 11 years in Vancouver. And for the fact that there is no drop off, I've gotten better over the age of 30. And you would be hard pressed to find a 23-year-old that could do what I can do at 36. And that's not being arrogant or bragging. That's just the honest to God truth. And like I said, the proof is in the pudding. So I don't know what's going on with that. I've had some out of football interests. I got a couple businesses going, getting those off the ground, a clothing line, and I'm a personal trainer. So the movement is big with that. So I'm always going to train. I've always trained since I was a little kid. That's not going to stop. I think that's what has enabled me to play this long. And, honestly, I feel like I could play till I'm 40.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, like I say, you say it's, you know, it's not bragging. Well, I've seen the workout videos and I promise you there aren't 20 guys, 25 years old that could keep up with you, which is why I say, you know, hopefully a team looks at, you know, the film and not just the date of birth to decide, you know, whether, you know, they wanted to bring you in or not. And I got to be honest with you, Dante, I'm a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan and God knows we need help at defensive back. You know, you would,
hey, man.
Any chance at all we can get you to black and gold for a year or two?
Man, listen, let me tell you something. I'm a diehard Raider fan for everybody who knows me. I love where I'm from, Oakland, California, diehard silver and black. Honestly, I have a lot of friends and, you know, real type brothers, I will call, from my days at Fresno State, the Derek Wards, the Michael Pittmans, you know, Vernon Foxes, and the list goes on. Like, hey, man, you should be in the NFL, man. And I understand that. I had my opportunity there, and unfortunately, the shoulder injury, you know, scares those teams off. And when you do your physical, they want to make you sign waivers and go through a whole gamut of things just to get you into camp. So, honestly, I took my son to the Battle of the Bay game, the Raider and 49er game, and I think I could, that smaller field, I would love. I think I'm 36. I could play in the NFL right now.
No, no doubt.
I mean, to me, and I'm not being – I'm being serious and honest because you can ask Chad Johnson. I mean, he was in Montreal last year. People don't give the CFL the respect that it's really due to the fact it's not prime time, it's not NFL, but a lot of NFL guys can't make that transition.
Mm-hmm.
They look like a fish out of water. And in speaking in terms of defensive back and wide receiver, it's so much more hard to cover a guy in the Canadian Football League than it is in regular football.
Right. You got so much more ground to cover, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Guys are in motion, right?
In motion.
You get a running head start on you.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's all good. Like I said, I have no regrets. I went from an injury that would have cost most players their careers, sat out of football 2 whole years after the Tennessee Titans season where I sat on injury reserve and, you know, ran off 11 more years after sitting out 2 years and 2 Grey Cups and pretty much probably a Hall of Fame career. So I don't have any regrets. However, I would love to play another year or two because I still have that burn and I still have that itch and I still can do it at a high level. I'm so honest with myself. If I couldn't do it, if last year I was losing a step and I was getting beat for touchdowns and I couldn't keep up with these young receivers, then yes, I would definitely, you know, hey, it's time for me to either move to safety or pack it up and go home. But that's not the case. So I'm kind of shocked at this point that the interest isn't where it should be. And I think that's more so based on age. And a lot of people in the Canadian Football League believe when Wally Bono discards a player or doesn't, you know, picks up a player's option or whatever that player has done, that's false. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a smaller league. And, you know, I know it's, you know, people, everybody knows everybody. So it's one of those deals. And I think it's going to come down to them seeing what the young guys can or cannot do. And then maybe doing something then. But at that point, I'm a guy that relishes training camp. I train all the time. I want to be there. I mean, training camp is nothing. I love it. That's fun. So I don't want to be sitting around July, August, 4 or 5 games into a season and getting a phone call. By that time, I'll be done. You know, got me a real job, so to speak.
But to that end, Dante, I mean, you know, as you know, there's many camps are going on. Training camp opens up here, you know, later this month. You know, could you envision that, you know, maybe you get a call at that point because whether it's, you know, someone goes down with injury or someone does, you know, is looking around and say, you know, hey, we need depth at cornerback. These guys aren't working out. And then, you know, you get a phone call, you know, whether it's in June or July.
Well, I mean, with me, and like I said, once again, people who know me know I'm a humble, hardworking guy. So please understand exactly what I'm saying. I'm not a depth guy. You know what I'm saying? It's not about the depth. I am ready to play football at an elite level at one of the hardest positions on the defense in the Canadian Football League, which is the boundary corner. The boundary halfback and the boundary corner, those two DB spots in the Canadian Football League are the hardest ones. That's where all the money is paid to. That's where most of the team's elite receivers play, in the boundary. So we have to cover those guys. So I've done that at a high level for 11 seasons. Last year was no exception. I had a strained MCL that cost me 4 games, but I was playing all-star football. Nobody was pissing a drop over there. So when you look at the film, and we're talking about, I have 33 career interceptions. I have a few touchdowns. The tackles are ridiculous. And we could just watch film. I mean, people know, like, what are you looking for? I'm not a finesse cover guy. I'm not a safety type player that's just a tackle guy. I could do it all. I'm a football player.
So right.
I think sometimes people who really don't know the game, they get enamored or they get, you know, blindsided, or their vision is foggy because they, when they think about DBs, they think about interceptions or you know, a cover guy, locked down. There's no such thing. All that ended with Deion Sanders. You know, the closest guys you could get to a shutdown corner, I think, would have been Champ Bailey and Charles Woodson in their prime. So those days are long gone due to the size of these receivers and the rule changes. So there is no such thing as a shutdown corner. You got to have a guy that can play football, that fits the scheme, that's going to be productive.
There you go. Bob, questions for Dante?
And Dante, Chris and I continue to marvel and laud yourself as the poster boy for physical fitness and a physical specimen. And it's a reason why you've had such a long career. During the season, Dante, what are the workouts in between games like? I mean, do you need time, obviously, to to come down off of games and recover? Or were you the type that, you know, give me a day and I'm going to get back right back in the weight room? Was it a 365-day a year job for you?
Yeah, I love it. See, the thing that people got to understand with me, like as a little kid, I used to go, you know, the grocery store with moms and pops, and we get the groceries, and I would get to the checkout line, and you know, I would beg for those muscle fitness magazines. You know, they're kind of on the expensive side, right? Like $6.99 or so. So I would beg my mom and my dad to buy me one. You know, and I'm old school. You know, I'm born in '79, so I came up, you know, watching G.I. Joe and all those type of cartoons. So I used to want to, you know, I want to be an action figure. I want to look like that when I get older. So I was doing push-ups, and I had a serious work ethic as a little kid. In terms of during the season, 36, I was up 6-something in the morning. I'd get over to the facility, take my Advocare supplements, a Snickers, turn on the radio, old school R&B, Rick James, Earth, Wind & Fire, whatever the case may be. And I'm really like getting it in like an off-season workout prior to our morning meetings, before we, you know, go to meetings, then get out on the field. And that was my daily routine, at least 3-4 days out the week. So I feel like what has enabled me to play such a long time and bounce back from shoulder injury or a hamstring or any type of injury for that matter. I never really had a debilitating injury that kept me out for more than 6 to 9 games throughout my CFL career. And I think that's due to the rigorous off-season training. I learned a lot from one of the greatest receivers to ever play up there, Milt Steagle. He was sort of like a mentor to me when I lived in Atlanta for 7 years, and just teaching me how to be a pro and how to approach things. This man is 40-something years old and got a six-pack. Still trains crazy to this day. And that's just, I'm old school. So I feel like my motto is, and I put it on shirts because I got a clothing line, is how can they beat you if they cannot work? And at 36, I seriously believe, I don't care. Age is a number. It's in the mind. If you cannot work me, you won't be. You know, sports will teach you discipline and how to deal with adversity, right? So that's just my motto. If you cannot work me, you're not going to beat me. And that's why you had guys like Daryl Green, Jerry Rice, and people want to say they're just, you know, abnormal and this, that, and the third. But no, I think it's just, they thirst for perfection. They strive for perfection. Jerry Rice was probably the greatest receiver ever to even touch a football. And what kept him going is, I mean, here's a guy that's won multiple Super Bowls, been to the Pro Bowl, has all these accolades. But it's not the game where he may have caught 13 passes for 250 yards and 3 touchdowns. It's that one drop he had on the slant route. That's why he kept going. And that's my mindset. You understand what I'm saying? So I feel like once I hit 30, I kept getting better and better and better because I was striving to be better. I think when you get content as a professional player, a lot of guys, once they reach a certain level, they feel like they don't have to do as much. I just keep working.
Yeah, it's obviously a good approach, and you just got to the point, Dante, where you just knew what it took to stay at a high level. And it gets a little tougher as you get older, but if you stay ahead of it like you did, usually good things happen. But I want to ask you, at Fresno State, Dante, you know, they're known as a passing school, and out here in the East Coast, we hear Fresno State, we just think of the ball in the air. And, you know, in practices back in the day, was it an air show during practice, and which probably helped you become a better cornerback, or was that kind of overrated?
No, it wasn't overrated. We don't put out some players. My DB coach who helped recruit me was J.D. Williams. He was a first-round pick out of Fresno back in, I think, like, 89. Henry Eller, great receiver. He was a wide receiver coach there. Jeff Teffer, who's now the head coach in B.C., was there. So practices were nice. I mean, we had, you know, me and David Carr came in as Pat Hill's first recruiting class. Billy Volek was our quarterback. We had some good receivers there, the Rodney Wrights, Bernard Berrians, you know. So, yeah, every day was like, you know, bring your lunch to, because we don't throw that ball around.
Dante, we've had a number of your former teammates with the BC Lions on the show with us. Most recently, John Hameister Reese joined us, and he was a finalist on MasterChef Canada.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
What's that?
I said I saw that. I've been keeping
up. Did John ever cook for you guys?
A couple of the practices, he came out and did some things. And yes, I think he had a shop downtown Vancouver, Mean Poutine or something like that.
Huh.
So he did prepare some stuff for us after practice last year.
When, if at some point, and again, we hope this some point is 4 or 5 years from now, but you decide to walk away from football. You've talked about the clothing line you got. You're doing some personal training. What do you want to do next?
I get a lot. I've started motivational speaking. My high school coach, Alonzo Carter, he's now the head coach for Contra Costa Junior College out here in the Bay Area, and he's been doing real well, like, you know, getting athletes when he was still in the high school ranks, scholarships, and then now he's doing it on the junior college level. He reached out to me and had me speak at his banquet a couple weeks ago. And it's just natural for me. I'm so passionate about it. Like, I would love to coach.
I can hear that.
Coach. Yes. I would love to coach position coach players, like DB. I'm a DB specialist guy. I love to do it all day long. I'm not sure right now if I'm ready to, you know, get into it heavily, because I still am real active and I still like to move around and I want to play. I still have that in me. So, and plus the hours are much longer than the hours are for players at this point. You know, I could see myself coaching at some point, definitely.
Very nice. Dante, like I say, you've touched on the clothing line. Talk a little bit about that, and, you know, for our listeners that are intrigued and want to check it out, how can they find it online?
It's really, I haven't had my website guy. He's actually in Saskatchewan. I got to get with him and get the website going, similar to my DanteMarsh.com. But I got it on Instagram. It's A100 Clothing Company. Just started like 8 months in, kind of started off as a joke, and then it became more and more and more serious. So right now, man, people loving it. We got, you know, fitted tees, printed t-shirts, baseball tees, sweatshirts, hoodies, to start getting more so into denim. And I got one of my buddies, he does a lot of customizing, sneakers and vests and things of that nature. So we getting our feet wet, and it's getting a good, we're getting a good response, and people are, you know, purchasing stuff and seeking us out to get it. So my ultimate goal is just to give back to the inner cities of Oakland, California, really come back home. Cause I was living in Georgia, and I was fortunate enough as a kid to have my father in my life and a lot of other positive men as role models to help me and help nurture what I wanted to do. Cause I knew when I was 5 years old, I wanted to play professional football. So a lot of the programs that we had, like Oakland Parks and Rec and things of that nature, the sports programs, those are like non-existent at this point. And then you have a lot of the youth that turn to the streets and drugs because there is nothing for them to do. And we don't have enough positive, and I'll take it even further, enough positive black men in the urban areas to go back and show these young men what it is to be a man, first and foremost, but then to show them, hey, man, I came from the same place you're coming from, and I've been able to do X, Y, and Z, and you can do it too. So that's like one of my most passionate things I want to do. And football is giving me a platform to network and put me in a position to be able to do those things. So that's like the clothing line is one thing, and personal training is another thing. And then it's like 7 streams of revenue creates a millionaire and billionaire. So the more streams of revenue I have, the more I can do, the more time of my own I can donate rather than having to be so compensated for. You understand? So that's my goal right now.
Again, what's the clothing line? Is it, did you say A100 Clothing Company?
Yeah. Yep. A100 Clothing Company.
Right now, we can find it on Instagram.
Yes, sir. A100 Clothing Company right now. Or my DMarsh31 Instagram. I got like 3 Instagrams. So, basically, one of the it's like a fitted T-shirt, workout shirt. It has a "How can it beat you if they cannot work you" on it. Everybody's loving it. It's a good response. you know, because working out is the thing. So I'm tying that into my personal training, and it's taking off. So
that's outstanding.
We're just trying to chisel at it, man. And like I said, you have to use your celebrity, quote unquote, or your popularity or your platform to make a difference. My main thing is I'm just on fire for what I do. I haven't worked a job in the last almost 15 years because I've been playing a kid's game for a nice size paycheck. And it's not work to me because I love doing it. 90 to 95% of the people in America cannot say that.
Right.
And my whole thing is to get these young guys to start thinking, the mindset. No man or woman can change what God has already approved or take away what God has already approved. So if we start thinking beyond what we can see or touch or feel and just have faith and then really strive every day, like what are you doing daily to get closer to your goals? Then we'll be awesome. And it's all a part of just going and grabbing the young guys out of the urban areas and just helping, man, the community, man. It's a lot of talent everywhere across America in these urban areas, man. We need to, you know, expose them to the world.
That's fantastic stuff. Dante, thank you so much for taking time out of your night to come back on the show and be with us again. We hope you'll continue to do it. Now, you know, really, we hope that you don't have time because you're playing in the league again. But if for whatever reason, we hope you come back.
Absolutely. I always have time, man. I appreciate you guys reaching out to me, man. I like being on the show.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much, Dante. Best of luck with all of that and continued success. We look forward to catching up with you soon. In the meantime, all the best to you and your family.
Keep us posted.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Take care, Dante. Dante Marsh, Bob, you know, we love the guys that bring passion. And you can hear the passion in his voice, you know, I mean, for crying out loud. You know, that's the thing that makes an impression on me. The other thing that makes an impression on me is this guy still deserves to be playing in the CFL somewhere.
Yeah, he's a pretty
not
amazing,
the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. A pretty amazing individual, Chris. I think you hit it right on the head as far as what this guy can do. I mean, you know, very enterprising, of course, with the clothing line, but the difference this guy can have in his hometown of like Oakland or just talking to young people in the future will, again, trump anything he ever does on the gridiron. But, man, he's a multifaceted guy, bright guy, and can still play.
Exactly right. All right, Bob, it's time for us to put a bow on this very busy episode of Thursday Night Tailgate. Thank you for the great job you always do, my friend. It's always the biggest privilege to share the airwaves with you.
Great guest, Chris, and that's kudos to you, man, for booking these guys. They're all great individuals.
All right, so speaking of booking, who do we have with us next week? Well, Bob Guinea is going to be back with us. You may recall Bob joined us when we did the live special edition from the Unstoppable Foundation Gala a couple of months ago. He was absolutely hilarious and so much fun to talk to. We wanted to get him back on the show as quickly as we could. Bob was a walk-on at Michigan State, and fans of the show The Bachelor will remember Bob from being on The Bachelorette and then The Bachelor as well. And he's done several other stints. And the guy, you know, to listen to the story that he told us last time, all the good fortune he just sort of fell into, like being on the Today Show, is absolutely fantastic. So we look forward to catching up with Bob next week. Former Giants and Eagles quarterback, now president and CEO of the NFL Alumni Association, Joe Pisarcik, will be making his first appearance on the show. And Joe, I got the opportunity to talk with him off the air, and he's got so many great stories. So we look forward to having Joe be a part of the show with us next week. Our friend, former Browns and Bengals linebacker Andre Davis is going to be back with us. We always love the opportunity to talk to Andre. Plus, another good friend, former Chiefs and Falcons wide receiver and author of a new book called When Opportunity Knocks, J.J. Burden, will be back with us as well. Plus, my namesake and the reporter from the Danbury News, Chris Mascaro, will be back with us. So to confuse the heck out of everybody, he'll be back with us next week. Look forward to catching up with him as well. So plus, you know, we'll have our regular 12th man segment with Sports One Marketing CEO David Meltzer as well. So it's going to be another great show. We hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. On the social media side, how can you follow us? Well, you can find me. I'm at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzeri. And the show is at TNT Podcast. Plus, check out our pages on Facebook. Give us a like. That's important to us, too. And if you've got some questions that you'd like us to ask on your behalf to any of our guests that you know they're going to be coming up on the show, let us know. We'll get those on the air for you as well. Plus, you can stay up to date with our future guests, who they are going to be. You can stream or download any of our archive episodes by going to our newly redesigned website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Thank you again, Renee. Bob, my friend, let's take us home.
Always a pleasure, Chris. A lot of fun, and looking forward to next week. And, of course, our thanks to our announcer, Joe LaGenusa, for the great job he does with our weekly intro and ads. And to Kyle Turley, Tim Pickett, and all our friends over at Gridiron Records for their partnership and our upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Christopher, we thank everyone out there for listening. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin. Keep fighting.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day or time, but I know this day will end. On a mission.